Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. This is Teachers for Class War, and I believe we have a remote Teacher for Class War on the phone. Jen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Right on. Thank you for giving us a call and for jumping on the airwaves once again.
You're welcome. It's always good to be on this show. I love it. I love the name. I love the content. I love the programmers.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
in the studio there.
So what do we want to report on today?
Well, I think first telling us about the meetings that you've been going to and just giving us sort of a status checkup on what's going on with the union and the district and, you know, fill us in on what you might know that the general public and some teachers might not know.
Okay. So just briefly, at the local level, the Pajaro Valley Federation of Teachers is in negotiations with the Pajaro Valley Unified School District. We've been fighting for binding arbitration all year. I know, and nobody knows, and I'll tell everybody now, that the district has called our negotiating team in for a meeting tomorrow. So tomorrow afternoon, we should have some information. The district's been really just jacking us around. Kind of using the budget crisis as a way to try to make us look bad, like we're stalling in negotiations. But in reality, folks who are interested can go to pvft.net, and under the negotiations section on our website, there's an update from the chief negotiator, Jack O'Connell, on May 10th. And he did a really good job at sort of outlining where we've been, where we're going. You know, there's sort of this, it's like, in a city or in a state after a huge crisis like an earthquake or a hurricane, that's when they use that crisis to implement the most draconian, the most repressive laws. And it's the same way with school districts. When there's a huge budget crisis, they use that opportunity to squeeze in on labor and say, oh, well, because of a budget crisis, we have to stop the proper negotiating process, overlook labor laws, you know, do bad faith bargaining, and they're not supposed to be held accountable. That's what I feel PVSD has been doing all year, but we haven't let them get away with it. So in that sense, they're going into meetings tomorrow, they're going to the table tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have something on binding arbitration, which would then allow us to go and negotiate for next year, and they want to talk about benefits and salary and furlough days, and all of those things are on the table. So at the local level, that's what that is. One thing that we decided at our last meeting was to start a campaign to pressure the school district to use the stimulus money that they're receiving for job saving, to save jobs.
And I'd like to know what would they use that money for otherwise?
Well, that's the question. And I'd really like, if your listeners out there have any opinions on this, I'm really open to hearing. They've been told by the county finance director, Bernie Fink, to not use the money for one-time things, to invest it well. And what we're saying is that money was created by Obama, or was given by Obama, to save jobs. But the district is saying, oh, we need to use it for more long-term things. What would they spend it on? Probably software. Probably just the same bullshit they've been wasting money on all of these years. And we say, if it's going to keep people in jobs for one more year, let them use it for, you know, because they're saying, oh, we'll just have to make cuts in a year anyway, so why go through all of this again? And we say, well, go through all of it again because we want to save our jobs for one more year.
And not to mention, I think that a lot of studies have shown that reducing class size is much more beneficial to students than having a different software program or a better software program.
Absolutely. So that's actually exactly right. Precisely is that, you know, investing long term. I mean, we can, maybe the economy will be better in a year. Maybe we can buy our jobs for a year while we think creatively about ways to save them the following year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all about creative thinking, and the school board just does not seem to be able to do that. They cannot act creatively. It's embarrassing.
The county's best idea was when they got some stimulus money, they were like, oh, we'll repave some of the roads. And that's as out of the box as they got. The county has already committed the first trickle of stimulus dollars nothing more than road construction.
Oh, my God. Because they probably think it's job creation. It's ridiculous. It's actually, you know, it's really sad. So That's a battle at the local front. At the state front, it's a little more interesting. The California Federation of Teachers filed a suit in court against Arnold Schwarzenegger. Maybe it was early last week, which is sort of like the court legal version of the proposition. So basically, whereas the proposition, I think it's 1A and B that are trying to get the money back for education, well, the California Federation of Teachers doesn't want to write to the courts to say to the state of California, you owe the schools this money, so we're suing you for it. Will we get it? I don't know. But I think it's worthwhile. It's a worthwhile lawsuit. It could set a precedent. And for me, I'm glad that's the place my union dues are going right now. You know.
And do you know when that will be over or how that's progressing? How that's expected to progress?
It was just filed early last week.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea what the timeline is or anything. No, sorry. So that's what's happening at the state level, though. And for now, you know, teachers are just trying to get through the end of the school year. And I really feel that I know that we're going to feel the ramifications of cuts next year and then the following year. That's when things are really going to hurt. When next year all of these tech assistants are gone, all of these classified staff are gone, so many secretaries, so many office assistants, so many health assistants are just gone next year. And it's going to fall, and then, you know, the next year it'll fall worse. And we were saying today, you know, I'm with the Native Americans. Maybe things do have to die to be reborn, you know.
Are there a lot of district office employees also being laid off at this time?
That's questionable. Dorma Baker admitted two Fridays ago in a very private email that was forwarded to us that publicly she had stated that there were 57 administrators laid off. But then in this very private email, she admitted that she'd actually doubled the number because the spreadsheet doubled the number that she was reading off of. Oh, so she was totally misquoted in the press.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, it's 56, she was saying. So mm-hmm. whatever half of 56 is, 27 or, you know, whatever, I don't know.
And so has that been leaked to the press yet? I mean.
No, they haven't shared that. It's just really sad, you know. So they've been saying all along, we are laying off just as many administrators, the same proportion. And in reality, she was doubling the number. Mm-hmm. So how many administrators were laid off at the district office? 5.5. How many teachers ended up losing their jobs? 173.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason the bilingual teachers saved all of their jobs was because the district had mistakenly placed a few of the bilingual teachers on their seniority list wrong. So because of that, and because we caught it, it enabled us to remove that class of teachers from the layoff list, if that makes any sense. So no bilingual teachers. Anybody with the B class pink slip has been rescinded because of that.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of fucked up. So that was good for our teachers. And then by avoiding hearings, we saved a few more. But, you know, it's just ugly. So, and administrators, you know, they did this thing where they cut 25% of departments. And they didn't say how that would affect the departments. They sort of left that to the departments. Well, wouldn't that have been nice if they'd gone to school sites and said, we're cutting this much from your school site. You figure out how you want to spend it, how you want to cut it.
Right.
Instead, they just sort of went to the principals a week before the first blush and, you know, said, what could you live without? And what can't you live without? Or what can you live with? And just asked the principals to sort of prioritize. And gave us no creativity, no structure, nothing. But at the district office, you know, purchasing, for example, is losing 20% of their budget. Or actually, what ended up happening is that the first round, it looked like they were all the district departments were going to lose 25%. But then when it came to the fifth round of cuts, we noticed on the end column, a lot of the district office cuts were put back
mm-hmm.
because they, quote, couldn't legally function without this department being filled to this capacity. They couldn't legally function without this department being filled to this capacity. And we're asking, well, what about nurses? Like, you're going to run right. all these schools about nurses. You're going to run all these schools about librarians. I mean, I think reading is a civil right, and if you, you know, deny a child the right to read, that is a crime. But they don't see it that way. So it's questionable what's going to be cut at the district office. You know, I'm sure a lot of classified positions will be cut at the district office. You know, I'm sure janitors and office assistants and aides will be cut. In terms of that mid or upper level administrator, no, they're not cutting. They're not revamping the administrative structure or looking at it or tearing it apart or anything. They're just, you know, they're just laying it off.
But it does look like there are a number of retirements coming up.
Very small, very small. We had negotiated an early retirement incentive, sometimes called a golden parachute or a SERP. We got that, negotiated that, but in order for it to save enough money to make it worth it, 50 teachers have to sign up. And teachers aren't retiring. And I'll tell you, people aren't retiring this year because of benefits, because they want to work one more year, because they don't. People's 501ks are outrageously low. They're just making less money. So we're going into a funny time, you know?
So there's something happening on my site, and I imagine this is happening at other sites as well, and I'm wondering if, from a union perspective, you can kind of explain to me, because it seems completely illogical. So we have 9 teachers that got laid off, and we're being told that 15 to 16 will be hired back in the fall. What the hell?
Yeah, I looked on the district website the other day, and they're hiring bilingual teachers. They have, you know, a call out to hire a bunch of different positions. I don't know. You know, I mean, they're laying off 9 and then they're saying you're getting even more. Do you have increased enrollment?
Yeah, we've had increased enrollment every single year for several years. And that's what created some of the absolutely terrible conditions in my classroom in the beginning of the year. And my principal told me, hey, it's going to be like this because the district never gives us enough teachers up front. We have to have the warm bodies in seats in classrooms before they will give us the teachers, even though we're looking at the, you know, the elementary school rosters and we're saying, okay, logically all of these students have to get split between these schools.
Yeah.
So we will have increased enrollment and maybe that's what it is. There's also something about class size reduction, but what I don't understand is
why lay off and
Yeah, exactly. Why lay
off?
That's
a budget thing.
Okay.
They just, in order for them to, in order for the PVUSD to sign off on their budget and not be taken over by the county, they needed to produce a balanced budget sometime in March, I believe. And that's that. And the only way they could balance their budget for 3 years out was to have a bunch of layoffs so that they could show that they were going to save this money. So whether they hire them back, the checks in the mail, all that stuff, it doesn't matter. When you have to produce a balanced budget, you have to produce a balanced budget. And unfortunately, with PVUSD, I don't even think they know how much their administrative structure costs to be creative, to create the kind of innovative top, you know, upper management that we need to balance the budget. They know how much they'll save when they, like, lay off a custodian, working less, you know, for 15 minutes a day, putting an office assistant between two schools. They can move the lowest level, the closest people to the kids. I mean, who does a kid go to when their life is crazy? The secretaries, the custodians. Those are the people that the kids talk to.
It's totally true. It's something that I really overlooked until this year, and I realized that the custodians have been at my school for like 19 and 25 years, and the kids all know them, and the custodians know their older brothers and their parents, and I mean, those custodians know everybody. They speak both languages, and they see everything. And I've had a couple of situations where our janitor came over and, you know, was giving kids a hard time because he thought they were disrespecting me. And I had to say, no, it's cool. But he jumped right into that, and the kids shaped right up and, you know, stood up straight and everything else. So
oh,
I totally agree with you.
At Renaissance, we called our custodian the Vice Principal Danny.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm not kidding. If you needed balloons in the middle of the day, he could find balloons. If you needed 6 plastic spoons, he could turn them up. If you needed, you know, puke cleaned up or somebody to watch your kids while you're in the bathroom, I mean, Vice Principal Danny, he could do it all. And, you know, it's like this. My favorite expression is, If the principal's not in school for a day, nobody knows. If the secretary's not in school for a day,
the whole thing
falls
apart. Yeah.
So why are we laying off the people that are closest to the kids, that are closest to the management of the school? It doesn't make any sense. But when you talk about management, you know, management looks out for management.
Right. I think that there's also this whole thing about shuffling people around in the district that's kind of silly. I mean, not kind of silly. It's totally ridiculous, right? Like, you know, if we have three office people who know our system inside and out and created systems and all work together beautifully and, you know, everything runs relatively smoothly in the front office, why are two of them going to be working in another school next year? You know, and why are we going to have somebody new? It's just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. They're being bumped. And, you know, why? Because that's how it is. So it's just so tragic, you know, and we just have to hang in there, be strong, be there for the kids for the next year or two, and then when it gets really bad, we're going to be the ones that end up having the good ideas to solve the problem, and I'm confident that we will, you know. Maybe we'll be, I don't know.
But how do we get those good ideas into play? I mean, if we don't even have good faith bargaining, like you're saying, I mean, how, realistically speaking, how do we get those good ideas beyond talking about it?
2010. The elections are up in 2010, and we need a new school board. We need a new progressive school board that's going to, the school board can fire the superintendent. The school board can do whatever they want to do. They're the school board. See, now we have a school board that doesn't, they're not creative, they're not empowered, they really don't see themselves as, they see themselves as a, to let the, you know, they see themselves as a body that allows the administrators to do their thing, and then everybody else can follow along, you know?
Right.
We need a board that's innovative, creative, kind of like your co-host's father. I mean, if he was a superintendent right now, we'd be looking at a very different situation. At least it would be more a more interesting conversation. You know, nobody's going to solve the problems. They're coming from Sacramento. They're coming from, you know, Madoff. They're coming from an artificial economy. I mean, it's a much, you know, complex issues. But I think we could be more creative. So in 2010, four of the school board members are coming up for election.
Which four?
Willie Yahiro, Kim Turley, Libby Wilson, and Leslie DeRose, the four most conservative people on the school board. If we can knock the four of them out, we are golden. We'll have a 6-1 majority. The only person on that board that will not be an ally of ours is Doug Keegan.
Who's, yeah, just always there.
Four people. So we have a lot of work to do. Four elections, and they're aptos.
Yeah.
So we need people of the lighter skin persuasion to walk those districts. We need a lot of money. I think we'll have a lot of money. I think people are good and sick of this school board. But, man, it's a lot of work to do.
Interesting.
It's a lot of work. Four campaigns is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And Aptos is a huge district. You know, you're talking about every single district going from Corralitos, coming all the way around Aptos, all the way to the ocean, across La Selva Beach, all the way up into Watsonville, around Target, and then up, cut through Watsonville, and then take all of kind of the middle of Watsonville. District 7 is Willie Hero. So it's a lot of territory to cover. But we can do it.
Well, definitely keep us posted about that and let us know actions that are being taken and actions that people can be taking.
Yeah, well, look for this campaign. We're going to kick it off in the next day or two to just get the public to tell the school board that they need to spend the stimulus money to save jobs. You know, that's what it is right now for us. That if it's a one-time shot, it's a one-time shot. But, you know, that's how we feel. And we hope other people feel the same way. Again, I do welcome, I hope people call in. I'd like to know what people think about that one. Because, you know, it is, maybe there's better ways to spend the money. I don't know. But I think it's like, invest the money well. How much better can we invest the money besides our own teachers and our own people? And
I mean,
you know, saving our comrades.
To give an illustrating story here, and I've probably mentioned this group before, but we have a cohort at my school who has not had a credentialed teacher for more than a month and a half in 2 years. They've gone through sixth grade and seventh grade, and they've had one credentialed teacher for a month and a half. And to deny those kids for another year, to me, seems like we're basically babysitting them, we're imprisoning them, like, we're not doing those kids any good because there's no consistency and they're losing respect for education and they feel like they're not good at things because they're being taught six different ways and they just don't happen to understand it. And I feel like we're really cheating them. So I can't see a thing. I mean, my situation totally aside, having a pink slip, I can't see anything better that we could possibly do than get those kids a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, use that time to think of creative ways to solve this problem. Or, I mean, we could do flexible. If the unions would come together, see, if the district would bargain well with the union, I want to end on this note. If the district would bargain well with the union, then we can all come together in good faith and do some out-of-the-box thinking. That's what the, and I hate to bring the police into this conversation, but law enforcement and the city brought 8 bargaining units together to agree on a 10% pay cut to save jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying we should take 10% pay cut. I'm not proposing a model, but I'm proposing the model of bringing everybody together. But if PBUSD isn't even bargaining in good faith, according to the law, mm-hmm. and trying to diss us up and down and all around, then there's no way we're going to come to the big table, you know, and be like, they want us to be flexible for nothing.
Right.
You know? And, you know, we want binding arbitration, which costs nothing. And mm-hmm. they're not even giving us that. So we're saying, well, you know, they want us to come to the table and talk about benefits and a pay cut and furlough days when they're not even talking about chops at the top. And how in the world are we going to come together and be creative with when they're behaving like that? But it is possible. It is possible for us to put things aside and sit down and say, okay, how can people share hours? How can people share contracts? Where can we take cuts and benefits? You mm-hmm. know, where can we, as individual teachers or as different classes of units, you know, give up some to for others to have? I mean, there's definitely ways to have these conversations. It's just that PBUSD doesn't, it's not a good incubator for those kinds of conversations, let's say.
Right. There's not a lot of trust built up. To say
not
the least.
Close. Not even close. Yeah.
Well, and especially
but hopefully
when,
tomorrow we'll have good news.
All right. Well, and especially when you're describing an administration that has essentially admitted that they don't even know, you know, it's just this big bureaucracy where they don't even know what the numbers look like. They're talking about, you know, this round of layoffs and Schwarzenegger's budget is looking like there might be another round. And it's just this big paper tiger. Mm-hmm. where they're balancing budgets on paper and then the impacts on real people's lives are quite different.
Terrific.
So, Jen, thank you for calling in and broadcasting
Welcome.
From the trenches.
Yay.
And we'll open up the phone line for callers. Free Radio is experiencing some technical issues and don't have a line 2.
Okay.
So if anyone who's listening and has been wanting to call in at Jen's request here, the number will be open in a minute. That's 427-3772.
Yeah, and I really want to reiterate, any ideas people have, the more creative, the crazier, the more out of the box, that's what we want to hear.
Cool.
Thank
well, thank you.
You
very much for calling and stay in touch.
Welcome.
All right.
Bye.
So you've been listening to Teachers for Class War on 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org on your digital interweb.
I have heard some people make some very degrading comments about the cops recently, and I personally believe that people should refrain from making degrading comments about the cops because the cops have a very difficult job, and they do it very well with great pride and integrity, and therefore I wrote a song in support of the cops, and it goes like this. Come and gather round, you people, now, and listen to me yak. All you doctors and you lawyers and you folks who push the crack and all you folks who push the buttons and you folks who push the mops. Come listen while I tell you how I really like the cops. Oh, I really like the cops. I think they're pretty cool. I like them in my neighborhood. I like them in my school. I think the cops are wonderful. I think the cops are nice. And I like to have a broken jaw and carry a pack of ice. I really like the cops. I think they're pretty neat. I like it when they take my face and smash it on the street, and then they drag me to a station and they lock me in a room, and then I like it when they rape me up the anus with the broom. I really like the cops. They make me want to sing. You know, my favorite movie is that tape of Rodney King. And so I really get pissed off whenever somebody like you suggests we should subject the cops to citizens' review. I really like the cops. I am so glad that they're around to hassle me and ticket me for sitting on the ground. I really love the cops. I'd be so sad if they were gone. There's something about a uniform that always turns me on. Yeah, I really like the cops so much, folks, that I don't think you should find out the number of your local cop watch group. And if there is no cop watch group in your town, that's good. I don't think you should start one. And if you're walking down the street and you see somebody getting hassled by the cops, I don't think you should stop and see what happens. I think you should just walk on by, because that person must deserve everything they get for not looking rich enough for the cops to leave them alone. And if you're with a group of people and the cops start picking all one of you, I don't think you should stick up for that person at all. I think you should just let the police physically and psychologically isolate your companion. And I don't think you should carry one of those little disposable drugstore cameras on your person at all times to document police brutality with when you see it. And I don't think your town should have a civilian review board to investigate citizen complaints against cops. And if you do have a board like that, then I think it should just be a rubber stamp committee that approves of everything the cops do. And if there's a cop in your town who makes a regular habit of beating up unarmed people, or raping women at gunpoint, or raping men at gunpoint, or killing people for an adrenaline rush because he is a psychopath, then I think that he should not be fired. And if he is fired, then that is definitely punishment enough for him, and he should not be prosecuted. And I most definitely do not think that you should put his name and his address and his telephone number and his list of crimes on a flyer and post that flyer all over town. And I don't think you should go to his neighborhood and talk to all his neighbors like people do when a convicted sex offender moves into a neighborhood and let them know what he has done. And I don't think that you should egg his house or slash his tires or run him out of town. And I don't think that when he applies for a job on the police force in the next town over the hill, I don't think you should go to that town too and do the same thing and make sure that he never works as a police officer again. I don't think you should do any of this, because your town has the best
free radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. That's Desert Rat and Oh, I Really Like the Cops. Speaking of, we got on the phone Minister of Information JR. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Wonderful. I'm all
Hey, first I wanted to ask you about the hearing today. I understand Messerly had an evidentiary hearing, a pretrial hearing.
Yes, he had a pretrial hearing. There was resistance organized. There was people in the street. The state is saying about 50. I was told thus far maybe about 100 or a little more. People were protesting. Basically, for those of you who don't know that Messerly is, he's the trigger man police. We noticed I didn't say just the murderer. But he was the murderer. He was a part of a team of people that helped put this together, and police officers that helped put this together and covered it up. So Messerly had a trial today, first day after they pushed his trial back, say about two to three months, due to the fact that Lavelle Nixon alleged killed four officers, and then the police killed him. So, he had a trial today, and the trial will be going on all week. So it was a preliminary evidentiary, where they see the evidence, and, it'll be going on all week, and the resistance will be organized also all week to let the judge, the DA, know that the people demand justice and are not arrested until they get justice.
Did anything come out of the hearing? Was there any news, or is it just kind of a preliminary setup?
It's a preliminary hearing. I didn't get exactly what came out of it, but I'm sure that if it was big news, we would have got a report. But, I wasn't in the courtroom. I was in the street, and there wasn't really anything that was said.
Well, speaking of the resistance and the streets, and speaking of what's occupying you this week, you have a hearing coming up as well, yeah?
Yeah, I have a hearing on the 21st. Preliminary hearing. Basically, they've been trying to drag the case out. I have a felony arson case, a bogus felony arson case, where they're trying to say I was setting trash cans on fire during the January 7th. Oakland Rebellion, the first day of the Oakland Rebellion, and it's totally bogus. I was out there covering it as a journalist for our show, The Block Report, as well as San Francisco Bayview newspaper and SFBayview.com, BlockReportRadio.com. I was covering it as a story like so many other stories and so many other journalists that were out there, due to the fact that I wasn't catering to the police or, like, kissing their ass. I was portraying the stories of the people, and from the people's perspective, I was targeted. Actually, 15 minutes after Mayor Ron Dellums of Oakland was booed, after people demanded that he ask for 4 to 5, however many officers were involved that night, to be indicted, he claimed that he didn't have any power to do that. But we say put it in the media. I mean, your word means a lot out here. So, but back to the case at hand in terms of my case. So 15 minutes after that, I was arrested, and he was booed, and I was arrested, and I seen from the paddy wagon about 70 to 80 people arrested. They cordoned off a whole block. So I wasn't the only person that was, you know, just happened to be outside. It was basically like strong military occupation, like you hear Israel doing to the Palestinians, or the America doing in Iraq or Afghanistan. Everybody within a certain block got arrested. People that lived on the block, people that may have been walking down the street, people who may have been outside protesting, and were locked up giving cases. Those cases, they spent maybe a day to 2 to 3 days in jail, depending on their ability to make bail, or the maybe different priors. Different people may have had priors, so they used that to help violate people if they were on parole or probation, and they let a number of different people go. Me and 10 people, they dropped 150 cases out of all 3 days of the Oakland Rebellion. Me and 10 people are still facing cases, and 3 to 4 of us, I'm not sure, are facing felons.
Are the 10 of you by any chance also either journalists or organizers or people who have been vocal in their opposition?
I'll say this. I don't just say what I've heard in the streets in terms of something like that, due to the fact I've heard that some were, but I don't know if they track records to really vouch for who does what.
Is there any kind of organizing going on with the group, though, or any, you know, as these hearings come up?
To be honest, there hasn't been a unified effort that in the beginning there was, unfortunately. But we working it through. And, you know, the block report in the Bayview are open to anybody who has contact with any of the Oakland 100. We definitely are ready to work in solidarity.
And you've got support going into this hearing?
Say it again.
And you've got support going into this hearing?
Yeah, we definitely have support going into the hearing. We've had, like, close to 100 people that come usually to the hearings when we are able to promote them correctly. So, but for the most part, we've been, you know, getting a lot of support.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. You mentioned you didn't have much of it, so I appreciate you spending some time on the air. And you're also the Minister of Information for the Prisoners of Consciousness Committee?
Yes, no doubt. Prisoners of Consciousness Committee is a vehicle for our black communities internationally. We have chapters and members all over the world, including Brazil, the United States. And as I said, it's our vehicle similar to the Black Panther Party. We see ourselves as the ideological cubs of the Black Panther Party in this resistance movement. So, you know, that's basically like my team. And, you know, shout out to all of them. Block Report, I want to say this too. BlockReportRadio.com is where you can check some of our info, but you can also go to MySpace.com/FreeAaronPatterson or MySpace.com/BlockReportRadio, and you can get links to other people like PLCC International and other people where you can see different parts of the work that we do around the world.
Well, thanks for speaking with us on Teachers for Class War.
Man, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a honor. Talk to you soon.
JR from the Prisoners of Consciousness Committee, Bayview newspaper. Stay tuned. Free Radio 101.1.